That's Segundo here, and I am very disappointed in the rather strange interview you are about to hear. You see, our young roving correspondent actually had the temerity to correct the author Dave White on the proper spelling of Jack Daniels, which, as any good bibulous fellow knows, is spelled with an apostrophe. But our young roving correspondent insisted that there was no apostrophe, and I may not be much of a book reader, but I do know how to spell Jack Daniels correctly. I'd blame our young roving correspondent's inadequacies on drink, but clearly he was not a drinking man. He must be a fool.
Okay, so I'm here with Dave White, who is the author of When One Man Dies. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You look a little perplexed there. I was actually going to ask you, is there another book coming called No Man is an Island, or what's the deal?
No, the next book, we tried every Dunn quote I could find, and we went with Shakespeare, The Evil That Men Do.
Well, that's a little bit of a cheat, isn't it?
It is. It is definitely a cheat, especially since the best title I could come up with, we had Whisper to Their Souls for the next book, but we decided to change that at the last minute.
You should try No Man is an Island.
I might have to.
I might have to. Well, I mean, is there any real sort of philosophizing connection? He doesn't seem to really quote a Dunn, so...
No, there's not as much philosophizing connection. I like the sound of the name, and I like the history of PIs having poets' last names.
Now, Jackson, did you stare at a $20 bill or something? What was the whole deal with that?
Actually, I just started working with first names, and that one seemed to click.
Ah, okay. And then we just... a matter of clicking. There's no sort of great import behind these names, not even Hanover, who, gee, reminds me of a particular kind of condition in the morning.
No, the names just came with the characters, it seems. It wasn't like I was real particular in terms of giving them some sort of philosophical background or poetic background. Or
not even Bill Martin, Mr. Yankees fan?
Well, Bill Martin, yes. Bill Martin was, I was trying to slip that by, but most people seem to have picked up on it, just as long as I didn't call him Billy.
Oh, okay. So, but other than that, no import, there's no significance whatsoever to these names.
Just Dunn, because of Philip Marlowe, Spencer, and I just wanted to keep that tradition of the poet's last names kind of going.
Gotcha. Well, the other tradition that you actually keep up is the fact that you have all his friends being war veterans, and Korea, Vietnam, and the like, and I'm wondering why you didn't go with Iraq or anything.
I don't know why I didn't go with Iraq. I think Iraq, there are mentions of Iraq in the second book.
Oh, okay. But, so those are the veterans in the second
those
book.
Those are the veterans in the second book. Okay. No, there's only one veteran.
For the first book, it's old geezers.
Yes. So we went young book two.
Young?
We went younger.
Oh, so you've got all your old geezers out of the way with the first book, and the second book is a matter of really sort of surrounding Jackson with more friends his age? Or?
Friends and enemies his age, his sister... there is his mother in the second book has Alzheimer's and she plays a key role,
but
mostly younger people. Bill Martin's not in it again, and the bartender returns briefly, but yeah. Mostly a new cast of characters in the second book.
There's a number of questions I actually have in relation to the book. I actually wanted to ask about your obsession with smells in this book. Often over environmental details. I mean, it's almost every single chapter I read in this book, I hear, you know, the smell of cigarettes or the smell of ham and eggs, but that's pretty much the only indication in many ways. So why did you sort of prioritize smell over everything else?
I think smell can lead to a lot of things. Isn't it the closest smell? Doesn't smell inspire memory most of the time? And I think with smells...
This is your Proust moment?
It's my Proust moment, yes. you know, a lot of times I can remember smelling something completely, you know, in a different situation and it reminding me of Thanksgiving with my grandparents or something like that. And I always think smell is, to me, a very key sense.
But surely colors and textures, these things have value too.
Yes.
These things trigger memories as well.
Yes.
These two things to often trigger, you know, family memories, at least for me.
Well, I'm colorblind, partially. So color doesn't have the same power,
you,
I guess.
I was going to ask you, because Burgess in this book, I was wondering if you were familiar with Anthony Burgess, because he was also colorblind. I'm not sure if you knew that.
I did not know that.
And that's why colors were tricky for him, too.
Yeah, I did not know that. I'm not familiar with Anthony Burgess.
Are you familiar with any Burgesses?
Wasn't the guy who played the Penguin in the Batman series?
Burgess Meredith.
Yeah.
But that Burgess is his first name.
I know, but that's the only Burgess I can think of.
Why didn't he squawk like a penguin in this then?
Probably would have came off as a little more cheesy than he already does.
Oh, okay. I wanted to also ask you about the third-person chapters in this book.
It seemed rather interesting to me, Bill Martin, because I'll just read a few sort of excerpts that I found.
Okay.
Jackson Dunn is finished. Martin couldn't wait to see the look on Dunn's face when he died. Jackson Dunn needs to die. Ruining Jackson Dunn was important. Now, it seems to me that Martin here was a bit of a one-trick pony, and I'm wondering why you felt the need to sort of constantly repeat this, Jackson Dunn must die, Jackson Dunn must be finished, because I every single time there was a third-person chapter, I was like, you know, this guy's sounding a bit like a broken record, you know?
I think he's a fixated character. I think he's got a bit of an obsession, and I think there are points where that's the only thing on his mind, and it continually comes up, especially since it's the first time he's seen Dunn in, you know, 5 or 6 years.
But some of these chapters are really short, and it essentially boils down to Jackson Dunn must die. So I'm wondering why a chapter like that would actually enter into the mix if it's essentially going to be the same old thing. I mean, Martin has interesting things going on, aside from the fact that he wants Jackson dead.
Yeah, I don't really recall at this point, but I know there are short chapters that boil down to that. But I think it's a pacing, almost a rhythm thing to me sometimes. It just... kind of reminding the reader that Martin was there and just kind of a break from Dunn, you know, even if it's for a page, kind of keep the reader going.
Really? So it's just really more of a reminder then?
Not true.
No, I mean, just a reminder to the reader? I mean, it doesn't serve any sort of plotting purpose?
Well, it serves a plot because it's actually more a character moment, I would guess.
A character moment, Jackson Dunn must die, that
yes.
We've heard already like 5 times in a
right.
row.
Right.
Okay.
It was a rhythm thing, almost like a beat.
Are we going to get something like this in the second book, where a character will enter as a third-person chapter, Jackson Dunn must die, Jackson Dunn must die?
Or? Yeah, it's just on every page.
Is this the Dave White formula?
That's the Dave White formula, Jackson Dunn must die. No, actually, the third book's in complete third person.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So it's really an out-of-body experience for Jackson.
A little bit.
Okay. Was it an out-of-body experience for you writing this third book?
The third book? I barely started the third book.
Oh, okay.
So no.
Oh, you're saying it's all in third person, so.
Oh. I thought you meant in terms of.
Oh,
numbers.
I see. Oh, wait. Okay, never mind. You said third book, and I thought you
I meant third person.
Okay.
The second book is in third person.
Yeah, entirely in third
entirely.
Person. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So. You're anyway. I won't revisit this exact same thing I just said to you. I just want to ask you also about
the hell.
Sorry, my writing is really terrible. Oh yeah, I wanted to ask you about this obsession with Taylor ham and eggs. You don't describe ham and eggs. You describe Taylor ham and eggs. What's so special about Taylor ham over just ham and eggs? I mean, is this a Jersey thing?
It is a Jersey thing. You're obviously not from Jersey. Taylor ham is really only available in New Jersey and apparently some parts of Florida.
So Jackson is not a gourmand, apparently.
No, this is really just fried ham that you put on a bagel.
Oh, okay. but why? I mean, did you get any sort of kickback from Taylor for this?
No, or? It's just a Jersey thing. It's like one of those Bon Jovi, Bruce Springsteen, Frank Sinatra, The Sopranos, Taylor ham.
Okay.
Diners.
The other question I had was in pertaining to... Oh, yeah. Speaking of product names, what of this Jack Daniels misspelling? I didn't realize that Jack Daniels had an apostrophe right before the S, and yet it does in your book. Was this kind of a standard, a place of not wanting to be sued by Jack Daniels? So you can actually call it Jack Daniel weak whiskey? Or
I didn't know that. You know, come to think of it, I think that was a copy editing thing. I think when we went through it, we changed it.
Really?
I'm not positive.
Did you have any sort of say on this?
Yeah, I think I had it as Jack Daniels, no apostrophe, and then I think I changed it.
Oh, yeah, it's Jack Daniel apostrophe S.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't remember that,
okay.
But I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
You have the book
yeah,
right
Yeah, I have
there,
the book.
So.
I can look it up right here. Anyway, the pizza delivery thing, this ruse of calling someone to order a pizza, it seemed to me a bit on the suspicious side because what with caller ID these days, I mean, do you know of any private investigators who actually conduct this practice? Or anything,
no.
Or?
No. I just thought it would be fun.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they could also track his cell phone number. Like, say if he calls and it'll blow his cover.
They could, but they're going to be able to pinpoint where he is across the street from the place.
Maybe not immediately.
Nah,
but
I'm sure
But if he doesn't want to blow his cover, why would he use a cell phone to order a pizza?
How else are you going to order a pizza?
Well, you can go to a payphone.
There are no payphones anymore. Not in New Jersey. Oh, not in Madison, New Jersey.
Maybe somewhere. So did you do any sort of research into private investigators for this, or is this really wholly imagined and cut from the whole cloth of other mystery novels?
Most of it's wholly imagined and cut from the cloth. I'm trying to remember. I talked to state troopers. My friend's father used to be a private investigator. I talked to him about little things, but nothing, you know. Obviously, really, real private investigators rarely do the sort of things that Jackson Dunn is doing in the novel, so it was more wholly imagined and you know, following that old tried-and-true formula.
Okay, because I was going to ask you about the sort of investigation, the information that the detectives give to Jackson. I mean, this seemed kind of suspicious to me, because wouldn't there, through due diligence, if Jackson was a true professional, he would have dug up this information himself?
He probably would have, but at that point he was off the case, wasn't he, when the detectives give him the
information?
Yeah,
but he would have actually done some I used to actually work in a private investigation office, and they go through, before they do any surveillance work, they actually go through all their computer search engines. You describe him having a search engine and looking through those, and yet this piece of information somehow eludes him. And so I'm wondering, that just seemed a little too convenient. You know,
it was convenient. It was convenient.
I mean, you know, it's almost that he's more of a lazy detective.
He is a bit of a lazy detective, especially at that point.
Yeah.
Especially since he doesn't really want to be, seem to really even want to be a private investigator anymore, except to pay the bills at the beginning of the novel, so he's not working terribly
So how
hard.
Does he keep getting work if he's not all that much of a professional?
Well, as we see that, well, we don't see in this book. In one of my short stories, it actually shows that they're not knocking down his door. He's been in enough trouble that people aren't really coming to him anymore.
The $5,000 that he gets, I was surprised he didn't use that for tuition at Rutgers. Why was that?
He still has some left.
Oh, okay.
Write it off as expenses. He might help use it as tuition.
He's like throwing this thing around, and I know college is really quite expensive, and if he's going to be hitting the books, he really needs to use that money, and he's just throwing it around left and right.
You're absolutely right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're right. He does throw that money around. Maybe he's got a trust fund.
Well, he actually says at the very beginning of the book that he doesn't have much in the way of money, that he actually takes on work because he doesn't have money. So what of this conundrum?
You're right. Well, he I think he's trying, the $5,000 he takes, he's trying to use against the people that gave it to him.
Huh. Okay. Now, as to Martin slicing the license with a really puny scissors on a Swiss Army knife, I mean, I was surprised.
Wow, spoiler.
It is a bit of a spoiler, but I don't actually tell you which license it was. But nevertheless, this seemed to me kind of odd, because I don't know any Swiss Army knife with scissors that strong to cut through an ID. I mean, why did you settle upon the Swiss Army knife? Or is this a special Swiss Army knife that we don't know?
It was a special, you know, James Bond type Swiss Army knife, MacGyver Swiss Army knife. You could cut through one of those. I've cut through a laminated thing with a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah,
scissors.
But that's not a license. A license is a lot thicker, though.
Not.
I mean, it's not like a student ID. I mean, yeah, you can kind of do it with a student ID. It's
going to
be tough, but nobody does it immediately, and he throws it in front of Jackson's face. So what of this?
I guess Bill Martin just has really strong hands and sharp scissors.
Yeah, but I'm bringing up these various points. Don't you think the reader might sort of question the lack of verisimilitude here? Or is this a matter of a heightened detail?
It's. I should have just gone with smell.
He should have just basically like sniffed
ID
menacingly,
exactly,
and then just like then just stomped on it, and then that would have been enough.
Yeah.
Okay.
I figured that was convenience. The Swiss Army knife. It was easier than him going and getting big, you know, scissors and coming back in terms of pacing and rhythm again.
Yeah. There's some hostility in this book towards Bruce Springsteen. What of this? Did you draw upon personal animosity towards him, or what?
There's hostility towards Bruce. I like Bruce.
Yeah. Well, Jackson has hostility. I'm not sure.
Jackson has hostility against Bruce?
It was a conversation in a bar where basically I'd prefer to take Sinatra or...
That was the girl.
That was the girl. Ah,
yeah.
So that's the girl. I'm sorry.
That was the girl. Jackson's not a girl.
Okay, so girls in Jersey all have hostility towards Springsteen. That's what you're
not
saying.
Not all hostility towards Springsteen. I find the women who are of Jackson's age are more into Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
And she picks out Sinatra to make a point.
Yeah, and John Bon Jovi.
And
as well.
Bon Jovi. Well, you know, all Jersey girls love Bon Jovi, so.
Speaking of girls in this book, I was actually sort of surprised that many of the women in this book, in fact, all of them, with the exception of the female detective,
largely seem to not have jobs. And, you know, we have the bartender who's wearing a tube top and jeans, but essentially they're either sexualized or unemployed. What is this? What's going on here? Is this the case with old Jersey girls, too?
They all have jobs.
Well, they don't really seem to announce them in this book. I don't actually see many women in this book that really sort of take the bull by the horns as the men do in this book. So what of this?
Well, I think all the women in this book are, a bit on the tortured side. I mean, one's a jazz musician. She has a job. She goes out and she plays her jazz saxophone.
Yes, yes. And Jackson really likes the way she uses her fingers.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Jen Hanover.
There's something implied by that, I think.
Probably, yeah. A little bit.
Okay. Oh, and you were saying?
Yeah, and Jen Hanover has a unnamed job that Jackson takes her to.
That's right.
So all the women have jobs.
But you don't really announce their jobs in the way that the jobs are announced for the men. You know, I mean, we know that it's a bartender, you know, his bartender friend. We know all these other people. We know, for example, that Jerry was a, well, initially, anyway, where we have the illusion that he has a particular job.
He doesn't have, well...
You know, the acting thing.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was mentioned in another short story.
Ah.
That's the only reason why that came up.
Why didn't the short stories, why weren't they included in this book, too? Because there's things in there that I'm missed on.
I know.
I should have read them.
You should
really have
read the short stories. Yeah. It's a lot thicker book. I think the book stands on its own without the short stories, but
there are these lingering questions I'm asking you that are in the short stories, so I don't know about that.
I didn't think people were going to ask so much about the jobs.
Well, I'm going to ask about everything. I'm really curious.
I know that now.
I read this book, and I'm very curious about your book.
Well, I'm glad you're curious about it.
The concern for music in this book, Kinks, Oasis, all these various sorts of names, what of this? Is it important to really sort of have to name that tune in a detective novel?
I did it more for my own enjoyment, I think, when I was writing it, and you know, what I was listening to at the time and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And I think music's very important to people. You know, it's a conversation piece, and it's, you know, in bars and
everything.
Yeah,
we're hearing
that. Yeah,
like exactly. Right now. I could make it into another novel. I wanted to also ask you about... Oh, yeah. Why does Jackson use a Glock? Is it in one of those other short stories? Because Glocks are not really reliable guns sometimes.
They're not reliable guns. I tried to pick... I'm trying to remember now.
Come on, author.
I know, you're right. I tried to pick a gun that I knew I had heard of. And I believe police officers use Glocks. At least Secret Service agents.
You have a hunch, or did you do any research?
Do research on guns, where I got caught a couple times making some gun mistakes in the short stories.
In the short stories.
But I was told he would have a reliable gun in terms of a Glock, which apparently not reliable, according to you.
Huh. I've heard it's not so reliable.
See, I've heard
it depends on the Glock, though. I mean, are you talking an older Glock, or...?
I think we're talking a newer Glock.
Okay.
A reliable Glock.
A reliable Glock. Okay.
I do know they don't have safeties, because I made that mistake.
That's true. Oh, yeah, I wanted to ask about the way that Martin speaks. Here's one of Martin's kinds of lines. That boat sailed away the moment you decided to put half the department on trial. Now, that seems to me a rather benign metaphor for someone who's so constantly angry, as we've established with all these mentions of him wanting to kill Jackson. So why do boats appeal to Martin in a way that, say, other peaceful images? Or why does he use peaceful images in tandem with this violence here, this vengeance?
I think deep down, Martin is a boat guy.
Really?
Yeah. He has mentioned boats before. He ends up at the boathouse. Boats are, you know, and boats are kind of on his mind.
Huh. But, you know, the other thing that's on his mind are really bad jokes, like the
really
roast beef and
bad
pea
jokes.
Soup
yes.
joke. And he uses this, and he actually manages to get laid out of it.
Yeah, well, he's a, you know.
I mean, I found this a bit on the sort of, you know, again, talking about the verisimilitude.
It works.
It works. You mean, if you were actually ask some woman here at this particular bar, you gave them that particular line, you'll get laid? Is that
not
what you're
tonight.
Saying?
It might take a little effort. We just condensed the time.
Oh. I can't think of any woman who would go for something like that.
You don't know the right women, then. You don't know Jersey girls.
Oh, well. No, not even Jersey girls, though, would necessarily go for that. Yeah. I mean, it just seems to me a sort of questionable use of charm. Unless you really were trying to sort of show that Martin does have a sensitive side and that this is his sensitive moment, right?
Well, I think that's the thing about Martin is you know, you keep harping on his one-mindedness of Jackson Dunn must die, but I think deep down he's a little more of a sympathetic character in terms of having a sensitive side, and I think the joke is his poor attempt that just happens to work out for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not exactly, you know, he's always been about the job and being a cop, and this girl comes along and, you know, kind of shakes that up on him, and he doesn't know exactly what to do, even though it works out.
Huh, okay. I was going to ask you another question relating to Martin, but I can't recall what it was. It's because I wrote in particularly terrible handwriting. Oh, yeah, the penchant that Jackson has for burgers. What of this? How did this arise? Why is he more of a burger guy? He's always pining for a burger. The burger is the sustenance he craves for in jail, and then he gets McDonald's and finds that quite lovely. So why is Jackson a burger guy?
It's Jackson's connection to me.
Oh, really?
I'm a burger guy.
You're a burger guy.
Looking at the menu, I'm thinking.
So you're tapping for personal experience here.
Happening personal experience.
Okay. Speaking of personal experience, yes. I mean, I know you work as a teacher, and yet in this book, there is, in fact, a drug plot involving teachers. So do you have personal experience for that, too?
No, the personal experience. Isn't it Stephen King who says, you're not supposed to write about what you know. You're supposed to write about what you want to write about and infuse it with what you know. So I think knowing about teachers and how they act and then adding this drug plot, you know, is kind of, you know, that same sort of thing, infusing it with what I know.
Oh, okay. But do you really know drugs? Do you have personal experience with that? Or did you do any research for that?
I did talk to state troopers. That's how I knew, found out in Vermont, which is how...
In Vermont, but not Jersey.
No, I couldn't get in touch with Jersey ones. This was actually a fluke thing in Vermont, talking to these state troopers, working security at a Phish concert. And overnight, with these state troopers who were sitting there and telling us about the crystal meth workshop that they had to go on so they knew what to look for.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my... the extent of my research.
Is that why you had the stutters kind of about 50 pages into the book? Because what? Do Vermont state troopers deal with stoners? You have the stoners sitting by the building, and if only they knew about the police were watching them, they wouldn't be so flagrant.
Yeah. Yes, that's why.
Okay.
I lost track of the question.
No,
so
no,
I disagree.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Well, then... why didn't you, like, talk to real drug users then for this? Because surely they have personal experience.
I have talked to real drug users.
Really?
Yes.
Did you talk to them for this, though?
No.
You were just only talking to state troopers.
No, I didn't talk to them for this. Oh. This was kind of my first foray into learning how to write a book.
Oh, yeah, because you're a debut novelist.
Yeah, I'm a debut novelist. So I was trying to figure it out as I went along. And obviously now, for the second book, I've done a bit more research on things and written a bit more, hopefully, about what I know and how to infuse that, you know, into the story.
Are you talking with state troopers beyond Vermont now for the second book?
I'm talking to Secret Service agents. Stuff like that, yeah.
Okay, who else are you talking to for the second book?
Who else have I talked to? My mother, who had an Alzheimer's-ridden mother. You know, and just internet research and that sort of thing.
Oh, internet research, but not
Wikipedia.
Not so much talking with people, though.
No, I don't like to talk with people.
You don't like to talk.
No, I'm kidding.
Why is that? You don't like to talk with me?
No, I'm enjoying this so far.
Okay, good. I wanted to ask.
No matter how hard you're trying to get me to walk away.
You have a tendency to write this book in sentence fragments with commas. So how does that come about? Is that something that comes from certain editors, or is that something that comes from you?
Can you give me an example?
Well, like, for you'll have, like, a clause, comma, clause, something like that. Like, actually, I think I have something here. Oh, yeah. I punched the dashboard, pain shooting through at my hand.
I kind of like the rhythm of that, the voice, the sound of the voice in the book. I think that's one of the more important things, especially in terms of, you know, a PI novel, which has been around for so long. You have to find, you know, your own voice. And I think I like the sound of it, you know? That's why I do it.
So that's
a stylistic
really,
choice.
That's really the motivation, the rhythm, more than anything else? Or?
Oh, in terms of...
in terms of writing, yeah.
Writing?
Was this a matter of part of the discovery process of writing a first novel?
Yeah, it was. You know, trying to figure out what sounds right and works and, you know, keep the voice of the character, you know? And you know, how he thinks and that sort of thing, since it's told largely from his point of view.
Yeah, with the exception of the third-person chapters, in which
right,
you kind of maybe got distracted for those. I don't know.
I got distracted.
Distracted because you're not writing in first person anymore. You're writing in third person.
I did enjoy.
Did you have to like sort of be schizophrenic as a writer for first person and third person?
The third person parts were added late.
Ah, late.
Yeah, it was.
So you wrote them all in one big chunk.
Pretty much, and then figured out where to put them.
Oh, okay. So was it kind of a matter of sort of like, you know, 52 card pickup for this novel? In fact, I think there's actually close to 52 chapters. Oh, you know what? There is very close. It's like 60 chapters.
Yeah. What do you mean 52 card pickup?
In terms of third person. Yeah.
I tried to figure out where most of them fit, you know, in terms of story and chronology.
Well, how did you figure that out? I mean, you know, when you have one version of Jackson Dunn must die versus another one of Jackson Dunn, I really would like him to die. I mean, how do you figure something
early
like
on
that?
It's really just I really would like him to die, and later it becomes he must die.
Oh, got it.
So that's
so there's gradients here.
Arc.
A gradient.
Yeah.
Okay. Ever so fine. I mean, that must have been a difficult sort of situation. How did you figure out like exactly how much Martin wants Jackson to die?
Well, different points of the book. In the beginning, it's just, you know, all right, I'm going to get my revenge. Now's my shot. You know, the gods have smiled upon me. And later in the book, after, you know, he kind of decides to, you know, really screw over Dunn and sees Dunn, you know, kind of crawling out from underneath that, it's more, all right, he's got to die. He must die.
Speaking of Dunn, you have characters constantly mispronounce his name. Is this your suggestion that nobody in Jersey knows about John Dunn?
No, I think it's my suggestion that nobody knows how to pronounce things.
Oh.
Not in Jersey, all over. I've gotten it all over the world.
Really?
Not the world, but all over the
They're
East Coast.
They're all saying Coast.
Donne? Donne. Dunny. Don.
Don. Got it. What was I going to ask you?
I actually am curious about this question. I think I may just go ahead and... It says, Burgers Drug Kingpin. And I don't know what that means. So maybe you could try to find a reason for
Burgers Drug Kingpin?
I have no idea. Then Anthony question mark.
Well, you brought...
I have no idea what the hell that means.
Burgess Drug Kingpin.
No
Anthony.
Wonder.
We already covered
that
topic.
Well, yes, we did cover that. Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah. I think you're as caught up in burgers as I am.
I really am. I actually had a burger today. That's why.
Are you? I think I'm going to get one.
Okay.
After we're done.
Oh, yeah. The connection with the press.
Yeah.
Jackson doesn't get along with Coffs, yet he has these connections with the press.
Right.
And I'm wondering why you settled upon this. I mean, you portray newspaper reporters as, well, they're in the process of dying, and then it's a sort of dying trade, and yet this fresh-faced young guy... actually early 30s, from Columbia, becomes, for a few chapters, Jackson's confidant.
I think, you know, people are still trying to break into this dying, you know, or I shouldn't even say dying. I believe it's more changing, becoming more immediate, and you know, I think newspapers are still going to exist, but and people are going to have to report the news, so there are going to be young, fresh-faced Columbia graduates.
And his name is Henry Steer at the Star-Telegram. That's a very interesting play on words.
Not
there.
The Star-Telegram, the Star-Ledger.
Star-Ledger, that's what I meant.
Yeah. Why is that an interesting play on... Oh, Steer-Star?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I have a friend whose last name is Steer. I just used that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Are there any other last names from friends who found their way in this book?
Not in the first one.
Oh, okay.
In
but
the
second
one
is a lot.
A lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have to ask permission of these various friends?
They were very happy to lend their names.
Oh, okay. But are there other names that you're sneaking in here that aren't being asked permission for?
In the second one? No,
in short stories. Did you get in trouble in your early days as a writer?
I'm not sneaking anything in.
Huh. It's all flagrant? It's all
transparent? It's all flagrant. Everybody knows.
Okay. Now, going back to this whole idea of you figuring out how to write this book, if you had any sort of, if you had to go back and tell the pre-novelist Dave White what he was up for, what would you tell him?
Stay away from the Bad Segundo show.
Really?
No, I wouldn't tell him that. I think I would tell him, you know, it's not as fly by the seat of your pants as you think it is. It's there's, you know, more research to do and more planning and, you know, plotting and that sort of thing.
How many drafts were there for this?
For this? Oh, 7 or 8.
7 or 8?
Yeah.
Do you think that was enough, or do you need more?
I thought it was enough at the time.
Oh, okay.
But I'm always going to cringe at something, you know, that I could have changed.
Book number 2 is how many drafts are there now?
So far, 4 or 5?
5?
Yeah, okay. This was more an organic, you know, process of going back and revising while I was writing and changing things that way. So it's, I guess, two or three official drafts, but a lot of rewriting went on while I was writing and that sort of thing.
Plot outlining too, or
not as much plot outlining.
Okay.
Yeah. That was what a lot of the changing was, and going back. Okay. You know, okay, I've made a mistake here, or the plot is going a different way. I'll have to go fix something that happened early in the book.
Gotcha.
That sort of thing. It was originally in first and third person, and then I went and decided it should be all third.
Is New Jersey the great hope for contemporary mystery novels?
New Jersey is the great hope for everything.
Really?
Yes.
Including world peace?
It is the cradle of a civilization.
Really?
New Jersey. Oh, yeah. Well, don't underestimate New Jersey.
Well, this is a very incredible statement. Back it up.
Oh, come on. We have Diners, we have Rutt's Hut, we have Bruce Springsteen and Bon Jovi, we have The Sopranos, and...
Not anymore. They
not
got canceled.
Anymore.
They
didn't get canceled. They're over. We had The Sopranos. Everything good comes out of New Jersey.
Including Dave White?
Including Dave White. Especially Dave White.
That's a bit of a hubristic statement, sir.
Once in a while, you have to make some hubris statements to go... Yeah,
but you're asking the listeners here to believe wholeheartedly in that statement.
They
Dave
should.
Dave White is the sort of paragon of young mystery novelists.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying
out of paragon
New Jersey.
So you're willing to actually sort of weigh Dave White as the king of Jersey over Dave White as the king of young mystery novelists?
I would say that, yeah.
Okay.
New Jersey. It's the place to
How
be.
How can we get you to have a little bit more faith in yourself as a mystery novelist? That's the question.
Well, I'm always working to get better. I don't want to come off as hubristic. Was that the word you used?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, too much when I'm just starting out. You're always striving to get better.
Oh, okay.
I've lived in Jersey 28 years. So.
What have you done in 2007 to get better?
What have I done in 2007 to get better as a writer?
Yeah.
I tried to write a more, not experimental, a bigger book.
Oh, an experimental?
No, not experimental.
You're not into experimentalism. Mm. But bigger books. I mean, how big is this book?
Bigger, and not in terms of size, but in terms of plot and you know, trying out different things and not just trying to write the same old PI novel.
Or maybe using, like, heavier bonds.
Heavier, stock. Yes.
Okay.
Bigger font.
Trying to help you out here.
I know you are. Thanks.
Okay. Well, Dave White, King of Jersey. It was a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much.
Chatting with you, too.
All right.
Bouncing off the sand.